Well, I do want to kind of talk about that resentment stuff and for just a second, because where it talks about, it's kind of like we all have these resentments and we think that we can wish them away and wish them away. And we're not talking about even when we're just come in. Let's talk about when we're 3 months down the line or 6 months or 5 years down the line. And we, all of a sudden we're more sober and we're smarter and better. And look at me, I'm so successful in AA. Right? Well, it's like, I've arrived. But we start getting these little resentments and we think we can wish them away. And we can't. And we really need to be real clear on that. I cannot wish resentments away. So it says that this is our course of action. See, it says to be free to live. If we were to live, we had to be free of this anger. Because see, one resentment's going to cut us off from the sunlight of the Spirit. And the insanity to drink is going to return. And we will drink. And for us to drink is to die. And so we have to be free of this anger. It doesn't say you might want to think about it. It says we must be free of this. And who's going to make this possible but God? And so we have a definite course to take. Now, in talking about that resentment prayer, I love people, I think, get a little bit confused. Because I hear a lot of times, well, I pray for them. I'm not. And I don't really care what happens to them, right? What I need changed is me. I have to change. My sponsor set me straight on this pretty quick. And says, here's our course. Now, we realize that people who wronged us were perhaps spiritually sick. And a lot of us, we like to stop right there, right? We like to go, well, they're sick. Bless their hearts. Because we don't want to read on. It says, because my sponsor will look at it, he goes, like you, Julie. Love you, but you're sick too, right? And so we realize that they're spiritually sick. Now, though we do not like their symptoms, like spiritual symptoms can seep out different ways. We can be arrogant. We can be critical. We can be, you know, whatever it is. These spiritual symptoms can, and when they disturb me, right, if it disturbs me, I don't like that. But then I have to go, well, they, like ourselves, are sick too. So they're no different from me. I do not get to place myself above anybody. When I do that, I become arrogant. If I think because your symptoms are sicker than mine, I'm worse than you are, because then I'm in judgment. So it says, we ask God to help us. Who are we going to ask? God. To help us show them the same tolerance, pity, and patience that we would cheerfully grant a sick friend. Now, sometimes this is quite difficult, especially if we've had somebody that has really, really harmed us, right? So that's why I say sometimes I don't give a rat's ass if that person lives or dies. And I'm going to be honest about that. At least I'm honest. Because this is what I need to do. It says, when a person offended, we said to ourselves, hey, God, this is a sick man. How can I be helpful to him? I can be helpful by not saying a word. I can be helpful by leaving. I can be helpful by never talking to them again if I can't be patient, kindly, and tolerant. Right? This is a sick man. How can I be helpful to him? God, save me from being angry. Thy will be done. See, who am I asking God to change? Me. Am I asking God to change that guy? Absolutely not. Because my world should not matter if they change or not. See, I need to get okay with whether you change or not. The deal is that if I don't change, I'm going to drink again. If my attitude doesn't change, I'm going to drink again. What's going to cut me off from the sunlight of the Spirit but one resentment, right? So I've got to be free of that anger. I've got to be free of it for me to live and walk free. It doesn't matter what people in this world do, say, think, or feel. I get to walk free of that. I have a course of action to get there, though. It's not about me sitting around and going, turn it over. I turned it over, and then I took it back. Well, really? Then you really didn't get on a course of action. Because if you get on a course of action, I guarantee you, you will be free of this. Does that make sense? Going on to the fear, is that good? You have anything else on that?
No, go.
Moving on the fear thing, I don't know about y'all, but I was always one of those friends that everybody would call me for advice, drunk or not. Like, and I always considered myself a pretty strong woman. And so when they said, you need to write down your fears, and I thought, that is funny, because I fear nothing. I'm afraid of nothing, or like Audrey said, I will plow through you in a minute to get what I need. I started writing my fears, and I had a book of fears. And that's why I say this is just a matter of getting pen to paper, and we get honest with the paper. I mean, I wrote down every single fear that I couldn't believe how much stuff, how many decisions, how much you played a part in every decision I made, and how afraid I was of what you thought of me, because it clearly showed on the paper. See, we can sit around and think all we want and be in the self-delusion of what we think we are and who we think we are. But when we get to the paper, and that's what this fourth step is all about. It's fact-finding, fact-facing to discover the truth about us. It's not to discover the drama. It's to discover the truth about. I don't care how it got. It's kind of like a friend of mine always says, you know, it's like getting the sour milk. Right? You got, if you're in a store and there's sour milk, I don't care how the sour milk got sour. It's sour. How are we going to discard it and get rid of it promptly without regret? Okay, I don't know about y'all, but that's the coolest promise right there. In the beginning, we're going to discard this and get rid of it promptly and without regret. Meaning, look, when we write this stuff out, it looks ugly. I don't know about y'all, but I'm sitting here writing, especially when she gets to the next inventory, that sex inventory. I'm like, ouch, right? And so I'm going, ucky, ucky, ucky. And to tell me that in the beginning, before I even start putting this to paper, that I promise you, and you better promise your proteges, promise you, as you write this, I promise you, you can get rid of this promptly and without regret. And God will take this to a different place and let you use it. See, I know that when I made that third step, and it's going to be followed up later, nothing in my life happened because it happened for me. It happened so that I can be of service to Him. How cool is that? I think I'm good. Okay.
All right, so back on 68, down at the bottom, we're going to roll into some sex inventory. Where are we at? 11:30, so we need to get 11:45, something. Okay. All right, so now about sex. Many of us needed an overhauling there. Raise your hands. I'm just kidding. Some of you just voluntarily. Me!
Take me.
We're gonna do some sex inventory, but it says above all we tried to be sensible on this question. I tell you what, I've never heard so many opinions in my whole life.
Oh yes.
Than when we get down to some sex inventory, and really what this is looking like is how am I interacting with other people, and what does that really look like? That's the question when we're looking at this inventory. So it says it's easy to get way off track. Here we find human opinions, highlight human opinions, running to extremes, absurd extremes perhaps. One set of voices cries, sex is a lust of our lower nature, a base necessity of procreation. Then we have the voices who cry for sex and more sex, who bewail the institution of marriage, who think that most of the troubles of the race are traceable to sex causes. We don't have enough of it. It's not the right kind. They see its significance everywhere. One school would allow man no flavor for his fare, and the other would have us all on a straight pepper diet. It's kind of like a spectrum. There are those of us out here who believe in monogamy, marriage, heterosexual relationships. There are those of us that believe in anything goes.
Whips
and then you will
chains.
Find a variation anywhere on that spectrum. It matters none. So not interested in your beliefs. Not one bit. When I sit down to look at sex conduct inventory, because that's the word, conduct, how am I conducting myself inside of these engagements and interactions, I don't care what Julie's thoughts are on marriage. I really don't. I need to know, where are you seeing me manifesting sickness by my character defects? Where am I showing up? That's what I need to know. I don't care if you think it's okay to be gay. I don't care if you think it's okay to have sex before marriage. I don't care. And I'm not here to tell you all the freaky stuff I've done. I've done some freaky stuff.
Too. I've done some.
Julie knows, right? So is Julie. And then it's funny. And there's some times that you've got some pain around that. You've got some shame around it. And you want to admit some of that to your sponsor. Have at it. You need to get some stuff off your chest. So cool. Go for it. Understand it's not about confession. That's not what it is. I don't need a list of everybody you've ever slept with. I'm not impressed. No one is. I've got to look for causes and conditions inside the confines of these interactions. And so we're going to get down to it. So it says, I'm not going to be the arbiter of anyone's sex conduct. That is so important. As a sponsor, you better get with that. I am not the arbiter of your sex conduct. I can't believe you had sex before you were married. No, not okay. We all have sex problems. What a relief. Mm-hmm. We'd hardly be human if we didn't. What can we do about them? So this is where I get down to looking at some, you know, fourth column, so to speak, in sex inventory. So it says, we reviewed our own conduct over the years past. I'm not here to talk to you about those men, those situations, and what they did to me. I'm here to talk to you about how I showed up and interacted within it. Right? I'm going to review my conduct over the years past. Where was I selfish, dishonest, or inconsiderate? So this is kind of a repeat of the resentment inventory and what it looked like. Where was I selfish in these relationships? Now, I've got to look at that and write that out. I don't check off. I was selfish, check. Dishonest, check. I need to see it for what it is. So whom had we hurt? My first inclination is to say, me. I got hurt. And maybe the other person. But you want to see a ripple in a pond? Get into some sex conduct inventory. Who picked up the pieces when the relationship broke? Or when it went through all the troubled waters based on your selfishness? That other person's coworkers when they couldn't show up sufficiently at work? Your family who had to listen to it for years? Your children who were neglected because you were running into yourself, so to speak, in this relationship? Get honest about that. Who got hurt? I've got to know the truth. Did I unjustifiably arouse jealousy, suspicion, or bitterness? This is not always about the act of sex. It can certainly play out in the bedroom, but it's not always about the act of sex. What part did you play trying to get your way? Where did you cause suspicion? Are you shady around the checkbook? Are you deleting text messages so they don't go through your phone? Where are you? Bitterness. Can you let go of anything? Are you consistently bringing that up? Are you consistently playing the role of the victim, trying to shame people into feeling bad? Where is self-pity playing a role in your life and in your relationships? Jealousy. That's about the easiest one to see. What have you been jealous of? What have you caused jealousy in other people about? I know it irritates him when I spend all my time with my mother, so I just do it to spite him. Right? That's not about the bedroom. That's about me. Right? This is so not about sex. It's really not. It's about the engagement you have with another human being. Where were we at fault? What should we have done instead? So this is a point in which my little stage characters come in live and live in color, and I get to see what I did, what I really did. Because most of us, especially all the women in this room, we've been harmed. That's the mentality that we walk into this with. Let me tell you what they did. Right? Why'd you stay? What role did that play? How did that serve you? Wow. Oh, I got to cry about it on everybody's shoulder. I got to be the victim. I got to elude sympathy from the people around me. If you felt sorry for me, I felt okay. Wow. Did you slaughter this other person's character in the meantime? Absolutely. Every single time. What role did you play? I've got to look at it. Since we got this down on paper and looked at it. So it can be just as simplistic as this. I have women that will write out that relationship, write the name. Write this next question. Where were you selfish? And jot it down. Just as simple as we did in the fourth column of the resentment inventory. where you dishonest, inconsiderate, whom God hurt, you will see more stuff pop up here, more pain pop up here. And here's the deal. I've never seen anything more redundant in my whole life. All these relationships, oh, they're all very different. No, they're not. No, they have different names and different faces, but you are the same consistently in all these relationships. The way you interact and the way that you try to get your way looks the same. It's kind of like we're all fighting for the power. We're all fighting to be on top of it. And if I can control it, manage it, manifest what I think I need, I'll be okay. Were you? How'd that work? Well, I've got 15 broken relationships on my inventory. Didn't pan out very well. Didn't pan out very well. It's important to see, what does that really look like? Because here's the deal. If you want to get somewhere different, you better know where you're at. Well, I didn't handle relationships very well, but, you know, God will fix that later. No, no. Get down to it. You want to show up differently? See where you're at, right? So it says, in this way, we tried to shape. Ooh, it's fluid. Shape, a sane and sound ideal for our future sex life. See, at this point, I'm making a Santa Claus list of all the stuff that I want in a relationship. Julie, who I hate when she does this, she marks through stuff. She's written in my book. She's marked through stuff I've written on paper. It's super irritating. But I made like a whole list of, I'm shaping sane and sound future ideals. This is what I need in a man. And it looked like physical characteristics. It looked like he better be from the South. A whole bunch of, she starts marking them off. And I'm like, I don't think you're supposed to do that. This is what me and God, you know. But here's the thing. She said, don't make a Santa Claus list. Wait on what God's got for you. Sane and sound ideals looks like, what do I want to bring to a relationship? It is better be the complete opposite of what I just saw in sex inventory. What do I need a partner to bring to a relationship? I'm looking at characteristics. I'm looking at values. I'm looking at core belief systems. The cool stuff. The stuff that matters. Right? Not, does he or she drive a BMW? Will they tolerate my smoking? Wow. Really? I remember one of the first things I tried to shape, there were four things on it. That's how poorly I showed up in sex conduct, is that I can only think of four things trying to shape a sane and sound. But neither one of us could be in a relationship, because I'm notorious for sleeping with your boyfriend. Right? That was one. Well, there had to be some sort of emotional involvement, because I'm notorious also for kicking them out and, nice to meet you. Right? It was so limited. And if I had confined that, the word shape would have lost its value. Because my sane and sound ideals today are not what they were 6.5 years ago. Thank God they have been molded and added to and taken from and conformed. Right? So I'm going to shape this. It says, we subjected each relation to the test. Was it selfish or not? Here's the first sex prayer. We ask God to mold our ideals and help us to live up to them. I'm not out shopping. I'm trying to be those. Everything I said I wanted in a partner, I'm trying to be that. I'm trying to get with some honesty. I'm trying to roll with some integrity. I'm trying to be the child of God I was designed to be. Do you guys get with that? More often than not, what we see is in early sobriety, we're all looking for somebody to fix us. Don't. Not because it's a rule from the big book, but because don't rob yourself of the experience of what God can do with you first. And then let the cool stuff come at you. It's the neatest thing to watch these men and women in sobriety. It says, we remembered always that our sex powers were God-given and therefore good, neither to be used lightly or selfishly, nor to be despised or loathed. And you're going to see that in sex inventory, that you've used your sex powers lightly and selfishly. Do you flirt just because you can?
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. You bend over just a little to the left, make sure he saw it. You pick up his pen off the floor. You know? I love that. Women always in sobriety complaining about, the men are staring me down. Right, but you're getting up in the middle of the meeting to go get coffee, shaking your ass right by him. Really? What do you expect?
That's right.
It's the truth. And women are, we're just as bad, if
that's
not
right.
Worse.
Say it.
Than the men. Right? Stop complaining about that stuff, because you're using your sex powers lightly and selfishly.
Mm-hmm.
Selfishly. I got to get down with it and look at it. Whatever our ideals turn out to be, we must be willing to grow towards it, which means I'm going to stumble. And we're going to talk about that in a minute, too. I'm going to fall. I made lots of mistakes. I flirted with people. I did all kinds of nonsense. And Julie would be like, come on back to the book. He's engaged. See the ring? Let's go. Right? I didn't know what I was doing. That's what a sponsor, they kind of hoard you in and back to the book. But she let me make a bunch of mistakes and bust my butt and run into myself to see what this text was talking about. I'm going to have these ideals, and I'm going to be willing to grow towards them. So it says at the bottom of that paragraph, this is your second prayer. In meditation, we ask God what we should do about each specific matter. I love this. The right answer will come, circle, if we want it. Right? I'm telling you what, I've never been around a bunch of people that had more, you know, God-given intuition who wanted to ignore it. You know it because it's going against the grain. Every single time, I know I need to not be doing this. Or I know I need to jump headlong in this, but just, I don't want to. Well, then stay where you're at. Sad. Stay where you're at. If you want it, you're about to get taken to another
level.
A whole nother level. But it says God alone can judge our sex situation. That's the truth. Counsel with other persons is often desirable, but we let God be the final judge. I'm telling you, I love nothing better than bounce stuff off of people. Women in the fellowship, men in the fellowship, my sponsor, my grand sponsor. Let's talk about this stuff. Let's wrestle with these ideas. Cool. Who's going to be the final judge? My Creator. Period. End of sentence.
Mm-hmm.
End of sentence. Because if you begin to make decisions based on what people tell you they think you ought to do, where will your reliance be? Always on them. Always on them. If I'd have done every single thing that Julie ever thought I should have done, I would have had to go to her every time and say, what do you think? What should I do? Should I leave? Should I stay? Should I date this one? Should I? Not her job. Her job is to get me connected to the power of God so that God can direct me. And if I'm awake, I hear it. Mm-hmm. And if I'm willing not to go back to step one, I listen to that stuff. So it says, I lost my page. It says, we realize that some people are as fanatical about sex as others are loose. So we've got all these opinions. The last thing you ever want from a drunk is an opinion, I assure you, right? Mm-hmm. I'm going to go to the source, which is my God. It says, we avoid hysterical thinking or advice. I can promise you this, guys, God does not come hysterically. He does. Those thoughts that you have that are hysterical come from you. He's the one. I gotta get him. Right? That's you. That's not the gentle urging of your Creator. Are you flashing back? She's sponsored me for too long. But those hysterical thoughts come from your peers. They come from your family. They come from a lot of well-meaning, intentioned people who go, no, don't. Get with God. Follow those nudgings. I challenge you to. So it says support in even our own. We got some hysterical thinking. Suppose we fall short of the chosen ideal and stumble. Suppose is a big old funny word in that book. You will. You'll fall short and you'll stumble because you're still human. You're not going to walk on water because you got sober. Does this mean we're going to get drunk? Some people tell us so. A lot of people will tell you so. You made a mistake. You're sick. You're an untreated alcoholic and you're about to get drunk. Really? Or are you human making mistakes because you're living life? Mm-hmm. I love for a woman to tell me, oh my God, Audrey, I swear I just feel like I'm making so many mistakes. Good. That means you're living. You've been sitting alone drinking in the garage for 7 years. You're out here stepping on toes and making mistakes. Awesome. Awesome. Welcome to learning how to live.
Absolutely.
Welcome to growing up in sobriety. Says this is only a half truth. It depends on us and our motives. Here's the key point. If we're sorry for what we've done and have the honest desire to let God take us to better things, we believe we will be forgiven and we'll have learned our lesson. Let me get transparent with you for a moment. In early sobriety, I was having a sexual relationship with a man who was engaged. I was. And Julie said to me, here's what the text says. I'm concerned about you. I want to show you what the book says and I want to talk about it. And we did. I didn't get drunk. I was sorry for what I had done, and when I was convicted by the power of God, not by my sponsor, she didn't berate me. She didn't make me feel like the scum of the earth. She didn't do that. But it was in the moments of aloneness when I realized who I had become. Mm-hmm. I had become the woman that I judged. Right? That came from my Creator, who said, Audrey, you don't want to do that anymore. And I got up and I never did it again. And to this day, I've never done it again. But that's not about her. saying, you better not, you better, don't speak to him. No, that's about a reliance and an experience with the power of God. Don't force your protégés to act right. Don't. Let them have an experience with it. And if I'd have needed to bust in my butt and drank over it, that's what I needed to do. But be smart enough to get out of the path of self-will. Don't interrupt that. Don't interrupt that. That's where the experience is to be found. Can y'all get with that? Mm-hmm. All right.
It's hard.
It's a beating.
It's hard sometimes.
It's a beating. So it says, if we are not sorry and our conduct continues to harm others, we're quite sure to drink. If something's brought into my awareness and I continue to choose over and over and over to do what I want to do, what the literature says is I'm quite sure to drink. If I'm not willing to do something different. We're not theorizing. These are facts out of our experiences. You know how many bodies they stepped over to get that experience?
Mm.
Tons. Mm. Tons. So it says, to sum up about sex, here's your third sex prayer. We earnestly pray for the right ideal, for guidance in each questionable situation, for sanity, that's a good one, and for the strength to do the right thing. Nothing harder than knowing what the right thing is to do and having a hard time doing it. It is like an out-of-body experience to watch yourself do the right thing, some of us for the very first time. It is a powerful experience to step back and go, oh my God, I continued to make the right decisions even though I didn't want to. How cool is that? That's Alcoholics Anonymous. That's what we're talking about. It says if sex is very troublesome, we throw ourselves the harder into helping others. So if relationships, sex relations, this kind of dating, your marriage, if you're having problems, don't sit and fix it alone. Because that's what we do. I don't know why we do that, but we sure do. I'm having an issue. Let me get in the corner and think about it. I don't talk to anybody about it. I'm not analyze it logically. Don't. Go down to the halfway house and see if there's a man or a woman you can talk to. Go down to the 24-hour club. I don't know if they have those in California. Go to a treatment center, a detox, a jail. Go share your story with a busted drunk.
Mm-hmm.
Right? You go to work on them. God goes to work on your issues. Don't fix it. Don't fix it. That's what we always want to do. I'm sober now. Let me go to work on don't. Your toolkit is still shady. Don't know what you're doing. Put it down. What you can do is go work with another alcoholic and watch God take care of your problems. We think of their needs and work for them. This takes us out of ourselves. It quiets the imperious urge when to yield would mean heartaches. And then they're going to wrap some stuff up. They're talking about inventory in general. It says, we've begun to comprehend their futility and their fatality. We've commenced to see their terrible destructiveness. This is the promise of the resentment prayer. We've begun to learn tolerance, patience, and goodwill toward all men, even our enemies, for we look on them as sick people. We've listed the people we have hurt by our conduct and are willing to straighten out the past if we can. In this book, you read again and again that faith did for us what we could not do for ourselves. We hope you're convinced now that God can remove whatever self-will has blocked you off from Him. Isn't it funny that you came in here not to be drinking? You're trying to get free of the bottle, and what they're driving at is you really need to get free of you. That's what we're looking for. Self will run riot. If you've made a decision, meaning that third step commitment, and an inventory of your grosser handicaps, meaning your largest handicaps, you've made a good beginning. It's like, dang, I thought I just did something. No, you made a good beginning. There's still a lot left to be done. That being so, have you swallowed and digested some big chunks of truth about yourself? Right? So self has me blocked from the sunlight. Four step is about getting down to causes and conditions of this so that when I walk into a fifth step, I can see the truth and then subsequently get free of it. That's what we're looking at. That's what we're looking at. Now that we've broken it down, it doesn't seem so big and bad and scary. Not really. You'll hear a lot of that in the meetings too. Oh my God, you're on your four step? Bless your heart. Don't scare the newcomer with stuff like that. That's nonsense. It's the most freeing exercise you can do before you roll into some amends and get into living in the sunlight of the Spirit. Julie, what do you got?
Well, that's such a good point. You know, we always sit around in meetings and we hear, oh, I'm on the four step, the dreaded four step, the dreaded four step. And that's such a BS because, the whole thing about the four step is just to bring light to us, the truth about us. And the cool thing is that for the first time, I actually saw who I really was. I am sitting there. I'm arrogant. Like, I didn't know that. I just thought I was strong. I just, you know, and all these things start coming to light. that sex inventory and on each inventory. Here's one thing about the fourth step is that there's so many, and I know there's so many different ways that people do it, and the book lays it out so beautifully and simply. Mm-hmm. All you need is the big book. You don't even, and a piece of paper and a pen. But there's different, and I don't really give a rat's patootie how you do it. Just get her done. Get her done. And I don't care how many resentments you have. I don't care. Just give me your top 10. You know, I mean, people are like, I had 70. Like, I had 130. I'm like, really? I don't know that many people. But that's all right. And then they're all like, oh, my God, I have to go back to the very first person. Johnny on the playground hit me with a rock. If Johnny on the playground that hit you with a rock doesn't bother you today, I don't care about Johnny on the playground. Does that make sense? It's kind of like everybody wants to do it so thorough that they go way overboard. We're such extremists. God, I love us. And so just get her done. I always say, get on your Nike shoes and get her done. Just do it. But we get to that sex inventory, and there we go with those opinions, and I really just want one more time to express that this is about me finding my truth. This is not about my sponsor pointing out my truth. This is not about my sponsor taking me to a different place. This is about me letting God take me to a different place. Nobody, nobody, nobody gets to tell me what is right or what is wrong. Mm-hmm. Nobody. Only God does. Nobody gets to be my judge. Nobody. Don't you dare sit in front of another human being and do their fifth step and judge them. If you're going to do that, get out. Because that's the worst thing we can do. That is none of our business. It is a business of getting them connected to God. That's our business, so that God can take them to a different place if He sees fit. God alone can judge, period. I can get advice from you guys because I know y'all think like I do and I know y'all like are on the same page with me. But you know what? When I get quiet with God, that's who gives me my direction. Nobody else does. Because let me tell you, I've had some stuff go on. And when it came to that, I literally put ouch next to the sex inventory because that hurt worse than anything. I was in a relationship, an abusive relationship with a man. I was married to him, and when after I did all the inventory, I saw how I put myself in that position, and it hurt. And it hurt. I saw how I was, my mistakes that I made. I wasn't all to blame. We're not always all to blame, but we have to look for our own mistakes. Where was I wrong? Where were my mistakes? Why? Because we got to put the other person aside totally. Putting them out of our minds, right? Putting their mistakes out of our minds. Where did I resolutely make the mistakes? So that I can take that to God later and let Him deal with me. Does that make sense? So we're looking for the truth about who? Me. This is my inventory, not anyone else's. How free do you want to be? That's the question. How free do you want to be? Do you want to walk free from this anger? Yeah? Well, come on. We can do it. All right. I think we're breaking for lunch. On page 72, we're talking about the fifth step. So we've just gotten done with that fourth step, and we've written it out, and we're like, ow! Holy cow, this hurts. I don't like myself. We're like these wounded dogs. You know, and I always say, it's amazing to me what God does, because I believe that truly we're shown little by little by little, because if we saw all the truth at once, we'd be like open, wounded dogs who couldn't lick themselves well. So that's why you're stuck with us for a lifetime. We got a lifetime of learning of our truth. But in the beginning here, it says, having made our personal inventory, what shall we do about it? Here's the question. We've been trying to get a new attitude, a new relationship with our Creator, and to discover the obstacles in our path. That's the goal. The goal is to get a new attitude. Like, my old attitude sucked. I gotta get a new one, a new relationship. It didn't say you didn't have a relationship. It's like, how's that working for you? Let's try a new one. You know, we're going to get a new relationship with this Creator and to discover the obstacles in the path and find out what is that self-will that blocked me off from Him. And it also goes on to say, we've admitted certain defects, right? Like, come on, haven't we all in our lifetime, we walk down the street and we can put our finger on the rough items in our life and we can kind of say, yeah, I know that's wrong with me, or yeah, I know I do that. And that's as far as we get. Mm-hmm. And we just keep walking, right? Here's the cool thing about this. It says, now these are about to be cast out. What a great promise that is. They're going to be cast out. And this requires action on our part. So we're going to have to do something, which when completed will mean that we have admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our defects. And I always say this is not about our sponsor. This is not... I have to admit this to another human being, but this isn't about the human being that's sitting across from me. This is about me and God. I just need that vessel that's sitting across from me, because otherwise I'm not getting humble. I don't know about y'all, but I was like one of those super women. I had the big S on my chest. I did it all drunk, but I did it all. Right? I mean, I can do everything and better than you. So what's going to happen is that we've got to get the S off the chest. We've got to get all that stuff broken down and get to who I am for reals. It talks about how this is difficult, right? Who likes to admit their mistakes? I don't know. Maybe y'all like, woohoo. Not me. So it's difficult. They knew it was difficult back then. We know it's difficult today. Especially discussing our defects with another person. We think we've done well enough admitting these things to ourselves. Right? Thought so. But there's doubt about that. In actual practice, we find a solitary self-appraisal insufficient. Many of us thought it was necessary to go much further. We will be more reconciled in discussing ourselves with another person when we see good reasons why we should do so. When I see a good reason, I don't ever, ever want to drink again. That's a good reason. That's the only reason I need right now. If we skip this vital step, we may not overcome drinking. And time, newcomers have tried to keep to themselves certain facts about their lives. It's crazy, because I remember telling my sponsor the one thing. Mm-hmm. That I said I would take to the grave. The one thing that absolutely nobody on this earth would ever know. And I told it, and I admitted it. And he kind of chuckled. And he said, "You're not the only one." And how relieving was that? I'm not the only one. And it was the deep, dark secret that I thought I was so bad. And how cool is this that this gets to be cast out? Trying to avoid this humbling experience, they have turned to easier methods. How many times did we all just sit in the rooms trying to avoid this experience? Or whatever it is, how many easier methods did we... I don't know about y'all. I went to Dr. Phil. I did this. I did that. Right? All these easier methods. Therapy. Whatever it was that I didn't have to do this. Anything but this. Oh, but they got drunk. Hey. Having persevered with the rest of the program, they wondered why they fell. And we think the reason is that they never completed the house cleaning. They took inventory all right, but hung on to some of the worst items in stock. They only thought they had lost their egoism and fear, and they only thought they had humbled themselves. Here's the kicker. That's what this whole step is about. That's why I've got a sponsor in front of me, because it's about humbling myself. Losing my fear, losing my ego, getting down to the nitty-gritty and busting me up. Not for them, but for me to get connected to this power. Because most people lead double lives, right? It's like the whole actor. I call it the mask that we wear. I was so good at it. Right? We think we are. I put on that. Here's the soccer mom mask. Here's the church lady mask. Here's the bar mask. Right? We have all these different lives that we lead. And then in our hearts, we know we don't deserve it. I was driving over here this morning with the girls, and I was talking to, you know, those little ladies in church, and oh my God, I love them, and I still love them, and I have friends like that, and they're just all sweet, and I'm loud, right? I know y'all know. I can't help it. I'm just loud. And I always wanted to be one of those sweet, how they talk like this. They just talk like this and they get their point across. I'm like, I want to be like, I thought that's how I should be. All through, I kept thinking, that's how I need to be. That's not how God made me. God made me loud. I don't know why. And so I put on that mask and I try to be this and I try to be this. And with all my will and all my might, I try to be something I'm not. Why? To impress you. So we've got to let, through this step, what happens is we let God take down all those masks and mold us into that person He intended us to be in the first place. Yes, Julie, you are loud. If you're performing your work well and sticking close to me, who cares what anybody else thinks? Does that make sense?
Yeah.
The thing is that's the part we get into this later in sobriety too, because we like to put up the good AA front and we like to say, yes, I'm doing great, yes, I'm doing great, yes, I'm doing great. And inside we're dying. We're dying. We see this in the rooms a lot. We're on our way. We're doing well. And then all of a sudden we keep, and we'll talk about it later. But I mean, this is, we all of a sudden we start making ourselves appear one way, but knowing in our heart we don't deserve it. And that is a lonely place to be. And that's where we want to be free of. And that's what this step is all about. It's about admitting it to somebody else so that we can get humble enough to say, you know what, I'm not perfect. I called my sponsor the other day to do a 10th step with him, and I forget what it was. And I said, I'll try to be nice. And he goes, please don't change now. He said, God's got you just like He's got you. I mean, it's the truth. I'm nice, don't get me wrong. But we giggle because I could be nicer. I could be nicer to my husband and stuff, you know? Couldn't we all? But why change now? But here's it goes on to say how the inconsistencies are made worse by the things he does on his spree and come into his senses. He's revolted at certain episodes he vaguely remembers or really remembers. I tell my husband I never blacked out, and he's like, where were you? Because I hope you were blacked out, right? And he's like, I hope you didn't do that and you meant to. Some have sex problems. He trembles to think someone might have observed him. As fast as he can, he pushes these memories far inside himself, and he hopes they will never see the light of day. And then he's under constant fear and tension, and then that makes for more drinking or more hiding and more withdrawing and just that black hole, as Bill describes it, that loneliness and despair, that bitter morass of self-pity. And we need to get out of that and find this power. So, once we find the right person, right? And then the book starts talking about that right person that you want to do this with. Someone who's going to be unaffected. Someone who is going to be closed-mouthed. And that's the person that we need to find to do this step with. You have to remember, when this book was written, AA was not on every street corner, right? You were shipped the book. So we want to find an understanding. I don't know how many times understanding is on that next page. understanding. I need to know what you're driving at. What you're driving at is getting a new relationship with that Creator, discovering the obstacles in the path. I need to be able to help you get to that truth. If you're not seeing it, I have been able to say, you know what? We're going to have to stop. Not sure you're really ready. I can't convince you of your own self-will. You have to see it. Does that make sense? Like, just like we can't convince somebody of step one, we can't convince somebody of their own self-will. If they're sitting there arguing with me, no, 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 I'm like, you know, you might be right. You might be right, but I can't help you. So what we do is we kind of pocket our pride and we go to it. Illuminating, I love illuminating. Illuminating means bring to light every twist of character and every dark cranny of the past. Right? So we are going to all bars off. All, we're going to all on the table. I'm going to let it loose. And I'm going to sit down and I'm going to go over this inventory that I've rewritten, and I'm prepared for a long talk. And once I start going with my sponsor and going through it, I start seeing, oh my gosh, pride, fear, ego, me, everything was me. I couldn't believe how arrogant I was. I really couldn't. I was like, oh my God, here I am. And I have to tell you, the first fifth step I ever did was so enlightening. I was so free feeling. It was amazing, because for the first time I saw who I was in black and white, and I could work with that. I had been to, I don't know about y'all, how many of y'all had like the stack of self-help books? Yeah, I did too. And I was talking to somebody else earlier, and we were talking about the fluff that we hear in the meetings and all that fluffy stuff, and that fluffy stuff sounds so good, and I can't obtain it, and I'm trying to obtain all this stuff, but I can't obtain anything because I don't even know who I am. Because I'm putting up so many stage characters. Like, I'm sitting in meetings and I'm telling you all that. Like, I'm all that and you're... I know nothing. And so for the first time, I actually saw who I was in black and white. I saw where I was selfish. I saw where I was self-centered. I saw where I was full of fear. Self-delusional. For the first time. So... once I was finished with that, I got to have some promises read to me. And these are my favorite promises of the book, because I sat in meetings for how many? 13 years? And not once did I know there was other promises. I only heard that there were 9-step promises. And I did not know there were 5th-step promises. Once we have taken this step, withholding nothing, meaning I can't withhold any information. I love to stop there and ask. I ask a few questions to the women.
75.
Oh, 75. I'm sorry. I'm real bad about that. No, I'm bad. We can look. We are delighted. Like, when's the last time you've been delighted? And how would you... whoever talks about that in meetings? All they do is go, oh, the dreaded 4-step. They never say, oh my God, after the 5th step, you can be delighted.
Right.
Like, where's the hope in the meetings? Come on, guys. Let's get the hope back in the meetings.
Yes.
We're delighted. We can look the world in the eye. We quit looking down. And we start looking up. We can hold our head high. Our fears fall from us. Oh my gosh. I had a stack of fears, and they just started dropping. Amazing. We begin to feel the nearness of our Creator. So it's just a beginning. It's another starting point, right? It doesn't say, hey, we're hooked again. We're like this. I've been like that, drunk. we may have had certain spiritual beliefs, but now we begin to have a spiritual experience, right? So it doesn't say we came in here ignorant. It doesn't say we came in here without an idea or being spiritual. Some of us come in here spiritual. There are atheists that are spiritual, okay? But now it's saying that we're beginning to have an awakening. We're beginning to become awakened. The feeling that the drink problem has disappeared will often come strongly, meaning I don't want it more and more. I'm separating more and more from it. I'm waking up and it's 3 o'clock before I start thinking about it. Oh my God. I don't know about y'all, but like I wake up and I'm like, when am I going to get it? How am I going to get it? Where am I going to get it? Who do I have to get to school to get it? And when, and right? I mean, it's like, da, 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 da. And now it's like 3 o'clock going, oh my God, I haven't thought about alcohol today. More and more, we become less interested in it. We feel we're on the broad highway walking hand in hand with the spirit of the universe. So returning home, we're going to find a place where we can be quiet for an hour, carefully reviewing what we've done. We thank God from the bottom of our heart that we know him better. Highlight! Because it just told me after the fifth step that I get to know him better. Meaning, I don't have to know him in step two or three. That I get to know him after the fifth step because I just got to know me. And where did we talk about finding God but deep down within us? And once I find out who I am a little bit more, I can find out who God is more and more. And here's the cool thing. Every time I sit down with you, I see him more and more and I grow more and more every day. I'm going to tell you today, I still do not know who God is. I still don't have it figured out because y'all come in here all busted up and then y'all get sober. And I'm still freaked out over it. I mean, I've seen some miracles in this room, and it still amazes me. I'm like, really? All right, there must be a God. Look at her. Gives us some more instructions and taking this book down from the shelf. And, you know, I actually put my book on my shelf. And took it down. I was so scared. I was like, I'm going to do this right. I read it. I was told, go home and read this. And I read it, and I'm like, oh, it says taking a book down from the shelf? Okay. I closed it. I put it up on the shelf, and then I took it down. I followed every direction. That was good. Carefully reading the first five proposals, the first five steps. We ask, here's a prayer, if we've omitted anything. Hey, God, did I leave anything out? What did I leave out? Anything in the first step? Anything in the second step? Anything in the third step? Anything in that fourth step? Anything in that fifth step? No? Oh, all right. For we're building an ark through which we're going to walk a free man at last. So we're going to make sure that our work is solid. We got to lay the foundation here. Is it solid so I can walk free? Or have I tried to skimp on something? Did I leave something out? Well, she'll never know that. He'll never need to know that. I can take that one to my grave. No, you can't. Not if you want to walk free. That's the kicker. And I guarantee you there's nothing in here that you have done or been done that we haven't heard. Truly. Guys, it's this, and the thing is that this whole step, if you look at the promises and we're talking about, we want to get rid of this promptly and without regret. This isn't about us. At this point, when we first go through this, we know this is about me, right? This is all about me because the world's still revolving around me. But later we find out, looking back, this was never about me. This was about me. Getting clear of it, understanding some truth around it, so then I could use it for somebody else. My dad died at 18 years old, when I was 18. It was the most devastating thing that has ever happened to me in my entire life because my dad was everything in my life. My mom, oh, I hate to say this on tape. my dad was everything to me, everything. He was my supporter. He knew when I was hurting. He was everything that my mother wasn't, okay? And so when he died, everything crashed. Through that experience, and it's still painful sometimes, through that experience, I've been able to help Audrey that went through the same thing. It makes it, that's why sometimes I have to look and say, you know what? Maybe it happened to me so that I could benefit her. How cool is that? Bad stuff happens. Bad stuff happens to us. Absolutely. But what can we do with it? What can we take and what can we share? And how can we help someone else? Because you know what? This program is about being of maximum service to God and the people about us. And the longer you stay in these rooms, the longer you will learn that. If you work this program, you will learn that. And that's when the joy comes. Being able to share the experiences that has happened to us. And now taking that, and it's kind of like other things. You know, I'm sitting down and doing a fist step with something. I don't even remember stuff. And all of a sudden she's saying, I'm like, tick, tick, tick. God kind of takes it out and says, here, I need you to use this now. Otherwise, I'm not even remembering it. That's the coolest thing. That's the promises that come out of this.
So looking at this from a standpoint of a sponsor, what we're doing is we're driving somebody back into the fourth column, driving them into looking at their stage characters and seeing the truth. So when it gives us that fifth step promise and it says, once we've taken the step with holding nothing, we're delighted, let's be clear on what we're talking about. I wasn't delighted to see what I saw, right? What I saw was, it's kind of a selfish prick. That's kind of what I saw. And a whole bunch of manifestations and a whole bunch of stage characters and a whole bunch of sickness and harms done to others. I didn't go, yes. But it was good to see the truth. And this is what we're talking about. Because if I don't know where I am, I can't get anywhere different. So if I've got a sponsor that will show me the truth, then I can do something with it. And so when we talk about the directions for what we do when we go home, it talks about being quiet for an hour and reviewing some things. We get real specific at this point in the book, or Bill gets real specific at this point in the book, and a lot of times this is the point where you're going to shortchange yourself. You're going to say, I'll sit with it for 10 minutes, or I'll sort of pseudo-meditate, or you know, I'll flip through back through my inventory pages or something.
I'll just do it on the car on the way home.
I'll take a nap and do it tomorrow. You know, all kinds of stuff, and I can get with that. I mean, God knows we don't ever like to do anything, you know, by the book. But here's the deal. Anything less than what this literature is asking you to do is a demonstration that you think you got a better way. So remember that when you want to go into 6 and 7 and go, oh, it's 2 paragraphs. Psh, no problem. I'll knock this out in 2 minutes. Don't do that. Don't do that. The 12 and 12 gets real clear about 6 and 7. It's kind of interesting if you ever want to read it. It talks about being the step that separates the men from the boys, the girls from the women. And what I see is a lot of people playing at sobriety, right, and mouthing stuff. You want to get real with some stuff, do a 6 and 7. You want to find some power? Do a step 6 and 7. I dare you. It is insane. Because Julie and I were having this conversation earlier about looking at character defects. And my delusional mind wants to use things like logic and reason. That if I do something long enough and don't like it, I'll just remember and stop doing it. Anybody been there? You ever get caught gossiping? And you're like, oh my God, I'm never going to do that again. I'm never going to do that again. That was so humiliating. I hurt somebody's feelings. It caused pain. I'm done with that. How'd that last? Like 3 weeks and you're like, girl, did you see what she was wearing? Right? You're going to say something. Human nature. You gotta understand what we're dealing with. We're dealing with spiritual principles and human nature. And we're watching them in collision, trying to get it sorted out in the path. If you'll stick with it, you'll get somewhere different. But you got to know that you seeing your defects won't get you anywhere. Except an idea of what you're working with. And then comes, what do you do with it? So it talks about asking yourself if you've omitted anything. There's a difference between forgetting and omitting. There was, I told you guys last night, I have a flair for the theatrics. I used to have fake panic attacks a lot when I was drinking because people feel sorry for you if they think you're crazy. And so I would fake a lot of panic attacks. Well, I completely forgot that. And some months down the road, I'm listening to an inventory, and this girl saying that she was faking this and faking illness. I faked a whole disease my senior year of high school. It was real kind of interesting to watch how it all came about, but manifested symptoms and the whole situation. But I forgot that. Now, that's dumb. How do you forget that? Well, you do. Mm-hmm. You do. And I'm listening to inventory, and I, oh, my gosh, Julie, I completely forgot X, Y, and Z. You know, there wasn't any work to do around it. It was about humility to let another person know who I was when it was brought to my attention. But I think that, you know, if we are to see everything all at once, I don't know, we might explode. I don't know. But over the years, I can assure you that as time passes in sobriety, God will take you to the depths of your defects if you'll let him. And there's always another layer. There's always another occurrence to be found. You're not going to see it all at once, but I've got to see the point, which is problems of my own making. That's what I've got to see. So having looked at that, we're on 76. I already did that. You missed it. We'll play it back for you.
Thanks.
Love you. All right, so we're on 76. We're looking at step 6. Now here's the thing. If I made a commitment in step 3 to finish the work, to see what God would do with me, then you can kind of address step 6 as a reaffirmation of that third step. Having seen what I've seen, which is the truth about me, am I willing to go on? Right? So it says, if we can answer to our satisfaction the questions that we just asked ourselves, we then look at step 6. We've emphasized willingness as being indispensable, absolutely essential. I've got to have willingness to continue to go on. Now, where do I find willingness to go on? How about fourth column of inventory? Right? After you've seen who you really are, do you want to hang on to that? After we gather up all the garbage and put it on your front doorstep and then ask you, would you like me to take that to the curb? Or would you like to keep that on your front doorstep? It gets real obvious what you want to do. And this is why you have to have a sponsor that knows this book, that knows what they're doing to show you. Are you now ready to let God remove from us all the things which we have admitted are objectionable? Well, what did we find was objectionable? That I'm selfish, self-centered, dishonest, things of that nature. But the specifics, the manifestations of self, that's what's objectionable. Is that working for you? Your controlling nature, your tendency to be a victim, the way that you want to go behind people's back and do things without their knowledge, is that objectionable to you? I should hope so. Having done an inventory with a strong sponsor, you'll find a lot of things objectionable. So it says, can he now take them all, every one? How long have you been trying to give God your alcoholism and nothing else? Please take this terrible situation. Leave me with the checkbook and the man. I got that. You know, no. Are you willing to give absolutely everything to God? This is not a ride the fence kind of program. This is an all or nothing. Either jump in or close the door and walk away. Truly, don't ride the fence. You want to get sick and crazy and confused in recovery? Ride the fence. You want to get well? Jump in. So it says, if we still cling to something we will not let go, we ask God to help us be willing. So at this point, I'm asking myself, am I willing to pay the price? Am I really willing to submit these defects of character and stop going to work on them? Right? How many times I'm really working on honesty. I'm really working on my honesty. Don't.
I'm praying for patience.
Don't do that either. Do the work in the book. Stop trying to sound so smart and so spiritual and go to work on you. If you working on you worked, would you be here? I'd be at home working on me, being happy. Right? No, I'm here to let God go to work on me. This is why this is not a self-help program. Mm-hmm. Right? Now, is there some measurable action I can take to not tell lies? I can stop telling people I'm an author? I can do that. You know, that's an obvious one. I can certainly do that. But I don't see all the delusions. I don't see all the sickness. There are stories I told for years that it took me a year or two in sobriety to go, I think that might be a lie. I think I've been telling that since I was 10, and it really didn't even happen. Mm-hmm. But I believe my own lies. It's true. She's listened to all of them. We've kind of sorted them out over the years, but I didn't know. But I didn't go to work on me. I said a prayer, asked God to do with it what he would, and I got my freaking hands off of it and got busy doing amends and some other things. So this is the 6-step prayer. If you're not willing to let something go, you ask God to help you be willing. If you're not willing to stop cheating on your spouse, you better ask God to help you be willing, right? Because if we're not, we've already been clear, my conduct harms others and I continue to live in a dishonest, secretive, sick world, I'm quite sure to drink. So I've got to get clear about that kind of stuff. So it says, when ready, we say something like this, and here's my seventh step prayer. My Creator, I'm now willing that you should have all of me, good and bad. I pray that you now remove from me every single defect of character which stands in the way of my usefulness to you and my fellows. Grant me strength as I go out from here to do your bidding. Amen. We've then completed step seven. So while there was no amen on the end of the third step prayer, we begin to find one at the end of the seventh step prayer. Why? Why? And the way to view that, and you know, one way to look at it is to look at it as sort of a covenant. You know, a commitment between you and this Creator that you're now on your knees saying a prayer to. On the third step, I got on my knees and I said, here's what I'm going to do. Please remove what's standing in the way of me doing it so I can be useful to you. Right? And then when you do that, I'm going to bear witness, which means I'm going to carry the message and I'm going to sponsor and I'm going to get involved. I don't always know that. Mm-hmm. At the third step, I never will forget the night I said my third step prayer and Cliff walked by. I was sitting on the bench and I walked by and he said, what are you doing out here? And I said, he's old and kind of grumpy sometimes. And I said, I'm scared. I just said my third step prayer. I'm just sitting here like, go away, you know? And he's like, well, you just made a huge mistake. I said, what are you talking about? Got on my knees, said the prayer, check, check. He said, no, the rest of your life is none of your business. Uh-huh. I was like, I so didn't sign up for that. You know, I thought we were saying a prayer. And I remember when I went back to the work with Julie having a clear depiction of what we were doing in the third step, that I was to submit everything. And then steps four and five is prayer and action. What are we really doing? What's really been going on? Some of my favorite questions to ask, what's really going on? But it's prayer and action. And then by the time I get to the seventh step, what that looks like is I'm signing off on the deal. Here, it's like a contract that got drawn up. Here's what I'm willing to do. Here's what I've done. Signing it off, moving on. I'm working on 6 and 7. We used to hear that at this one meeting all the time. We were like, you could do that by the end of this meeting. You could have been worked out on 6 and 7. What are you working on? This is another decision. Are you willing to continue to submit to the work? Are you willing to continue to go out and make amends and begin to do work with 10, 11, and 12? That's it. It's no real great spiritual complexity. If you boil this program down to its simplest form, oh my God. I told a girl the other day, I said, do you know how many dumbass people I've seen get sober? Mm-hmm. Tons. You do not have to be brilliant to do this. There are no huge spiritual innuendos. It's so simple if you'll just submit to it. So the seventh step, I'm kind of signing off on the deal. And while God's going to work on me, what am I committed to do? Right? So when it says that I'm to give all of me to Him and remove the defects that stand in the way of my usefulness to God, I'm not to ask for these defects to be removed so I can sit at home and be comfortable. Right? And God's not going to remove everything at once because they're teaching tools. Mm-hmm. I wanted to walk on water, and I spent a lot of time and energy doing that in early sobriety, trying to get it all perfect, all perfect. And Cliff said to me, I tell you what, kid, it's hell having to be human when you want to walk on water. I just, bye, Cliff. You know, I don't get to do that. When I mess up, when I'm dishonest, and I still am, I have moments. When I do that, it's always for somebody else. I tell you what, you start sponsoring and it'll be abundantly clear that your life is not your own. Mm-hmm. Everything you go through, watch him or her come right up behind you going through the same thing. 100 times over. It's not up to me. It's not up to me. He removes those as he will. So grant me strength as I go out from here. What am I going out from here to do? What's his bidding now? Well, after step seven, it's to make the list. I'm about to roll into 8 and 9 tonight, right? See, I go to my sponsor's house or wherever you're meeting. I'm doing that inventory, which if you're taking longer than about 2 to 3 hours to do inventory, you are spinning your wheels or they are talking too much. No, no. It doesn't take that long to see the truth. It really, really doesn't. I hear people say that all the time. It takes about 8, 10 hours on that first inventory. I'm glad you don't sponsor me. God Almighty. No, it really doesn't. I will stop you short in the middle of your dramatic story and go, it's this and this. Next. Next. We don't know. Get clear on that. So I'm doing that in an afternoon. I'm going home. I'm spending an hour doing 6 and 7. That night, pen, paper, 8-step list. Who do I owe amends to? I'm pulling them all off of that inventory. You want to say something about 6 and 7?
When it says good and bad, I mean, here's the point. I've got to give all of me to him. And I don't get to give just the bad, right, and keep the good. I don't give just the good and keep the bad. And I think, oh, that's too bad. You can't have that. I must hold on to that. No, I give all of me at this point. And here's why, and this is what this looks like, guys. And this is what I used to say when I go carry the message into all these little treatment centers. It's kind of like if I go off, out, let's say I go and I'm do this. Right? I'm out here at the podium and I do this and I walk off and I go, oh my gosh, that sucked. Because we can do that, right? We can walk out of any situation. We can walk away from a conversation with someone. And what do we start thinking about? Me. Did we hear what they said? No, all we keep replaying is everything we said, right? And so I can walk off and I can sit there and I can say, oh my God, I can't believe I said that. I should have said this and it should have gone like this and I should have done. Okay, so what am I saying? I'm taking the credit. Therefore, it's kind of like I'm now going to go into self-pity. Same as if I were to walk off and say, oh my God, that was great. Did you hear him laugh? I like rocked. I mean, who's taking the credit? Who am I giving credit to? Me. That's saying I'm doing it. And it sounds crazy, but you know what? I am going to succeed in sobriety, and I am going to fail in sobriety. My successes and my failures are not mine. They are his to do with. And that way, I stay even. I stay one with you. I'm not above you, and I'm not below you. I'm shoulder to shoulder with you. How cool is that? Like, I don't think I'm bad. Guys, come on. This is a book. We get to read it. We get to study it. We get to have fun with it. Just because I'm at this side of the table doesn't mean I'm better than anybody. Does that make sense? And so I love, a friend of mine says, once we believe we've arrived in AA, you need to look around. So look what you've arrived to. The losers. I didn't say that. I'm one of them. The point is this is the humbling step, truthfully. This is truly where we get to stay humble and get on our knees and give everything to him. And if I'm giving everything to him, then I don't take it. I don't take any of it. It's not, this is not me. If it weren't for him, I wouldn't be sober, first off. If it weren't for him, I wouldn't have the knowledge, second off. If it weren't for him, I wouldn't have what I have. I am everything I am because of him, and he gets all the credit. He gets my successes, and he gets my failures. That is it. If you don't like it, I'm sorry. I can't go back to stick close to him, perform his work well. If the person next to you doesn't like how you're doing it, too bad. As long as, what else do you say? This is where we rely on him solely, and this is where we end that third step, and we get to start giving everything to him. I was going to say something else. I hate these. I still to this day call my sponsor before I speak. It is because early in, this is not my favorite thing to do for those of you who, when I go to speak, I just like, I want to puke. Truly, my hands are sweaty. I just want to throw up. I can't have conversation with anybody before I speak. If you'll, I'm like, blah, 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 my th-. Anyway. So when early in sobriety, people used to call me and say, Julie, will you please come speak for us? And I'm like, oh my God, yes, because I've been taught never to say no. Oh yes, yes, yes. Oh, you should get Audrey. She is awesome. And so I used to throw her under the bus every day.
I didn't know this till a year ago, mind you. I didn't know that.
But so whenever I speak, I still to this day call my sponsor before I speak. And he used to say, Julie, you got one story to tell. The one you were going to tell, the one you told, and the one you should have told. And isn't that true with us in life and everything? It's always the what we're going to do, what we, what we did, and what we should have done. Because aren't we always looking everywhere else but what we did? And my point is with that is that even if we make mistakes, because we will make mistakes, we will. Thank God. And we're going to talk about that more in step 10, because those mistakes, once again, she said, are not ours mistakes. They're going to be used for somebody else. I get to grow in understanding and be more effective for someone else. Same with my successes. So does that make sense? Did I leave anything out? I think that's it.
Okay. Let's go ahead and take a break.